Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast.
Bonjour et bon matin. Welcome to Ghost Hunting in New England podcast. I'm your host, Amelia, and we are on the road this week, baby, here in the City of Lights, the City of Love, the City of Paris, France. Your girl needed a vacation, something awful, and my stars aligned in the form of a Groupon. So I made my way over across the sea, and here I am, loving the people, the food. Oh, and all the spookiness this 2,000-year-old city has to offer. I'll admit, I've been huffing and puffing a little as my private tour of the very famous Pierre Lachaise Cemetery was cancelled, and I was so hoping to pay Edith Piaf a visit, but that is all right, because I'm still here, living in Villa Rose. And besides, there's another cemetery I am excited to tell you about tonight. Or, should I say, a series of cemeteries moved underground. That's right, 6 million French bodies. Rough estimates date the skeletons back between the years 1000 and 1770 AD. They were moved underneath the ground in stacks between the years 1776 and 1780. That's right. Tonight we're discussing Les Catacombes de Paris, the Catacombs of Paris. So the day started out absolutely insane for this American tourist. I wake up and drag my sleepy jet-lagged body down to the hotel lobby for some breakfast and 4 shots of espresso, then call for an Uber. The transportation workers here are on strike right now, and the traffic in Paris is somehow even worse than the traffic in Boston. It just takes forever to get anywhere, and I've seen at least 6 or 7 car accidents so far. It's absolutely wild trying to get around the city. For example, my Uber driver that morning decided to take a scenic route along a pedestrian sidewalk in the 17th District. And me not speaking French, and he not speaking English, there was a bit of silent tension coming from the back seat as I just held my breath and silently began speaking to my angels. But we and all the many people on the sidewalk that morning, thankfully, made it safely off the sidewalk, and I was on the way to the semi-private guided tour of the catacombs to take me into private passageways not open to the general public. So I arrive. It's very cold outside, and I show my ticket to a nice woman wearing a security jacket who doesn't seem to speak much English outside of the phrase, "That line over there, you go over to that line over there." Okay, I understood. I go to that line. And then I go on Facebook Live to air some grievances about how perhaps I didn't need to spend 90 euro on the Skip the Line tour only to be standing here in this line with no coffee, but that's okay. Vibrations are still high, and 20 minutes later I make it to the front of the ticket holder's line and proudly present my ticket. And then, well, despite being a little sleepy and a bit shaken, I did keep in mind my listeners and recorded a little bit of what I experienced.
So I got in after staying in the line, and I gave them my ticket, and they were like, "Oh, you were supposed to meet somewhere else." And I was like, "Well, I gave them my ticket. I gave them everything." And they told me to wait in the line, and they were like, "Oh, well, they're wrong." And then they're like, "Okay, well, you have to go down there and find your guide." And I'm like, "Is anyone coming with me?" And they said no. So now I'm going to the base of the catacombs by myself. All right, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Yeah, so that's right. I got to the front of the line, and they told me I missed my tour. And I was like, "I'm not going to miss it." So they got me in touch with someone who spoke English, and he got me talking to the woman in charge of the door. And then that was it. I had to run down all 130 stairs into the base of the catacombs by myself, the whole while wondering how I pulled off the lead role in this horror movie I seemed to be participating in, but managed to shake off that feeling as I pushed and shoved my way through curious Parisians and tourists from all over the world. "Pardon, excusez-moi, I'm so sorry, I'm just looking for my group." Ah, and then yes, I see them, being led by who turned out to be a fabulous tour guide named Michelle from Florida. But enough about me. let's get into the little history of what's going on in this massive underground gravesite. In the mid to late 1700s, what would become a 200-mile series of underground tunnels began being built under the streets of Paris. The tunnels are now found underneath all the city's electrical lines and subway systems and follow natural formations within the rock, which is why they are so low. Now, many of you may be aware that modern French society operates within a mixture of capitalism and socialism, with some of the world's most stringent labor laws, including a mandated 5-week paid vacation given to every employee each year. But as many of the people of Paris will be eager to tell Americans as they walk by, this is because back in the day, people were made to work 7 days a week, which, allow me to tell you, as someone who's been doing it for 7 years now, it can be a bit taxing on the soul. But now, imagine a time before indoor plumbing, before heating and air conditioning units, and you're a quarryman sent out 7 days a week to build these underground tunnels. Now, obviously, the risk of a tunnel collapsing and burying you alive is a very real reality, but collapses in the tunnels actually occurred quite rarely. What was more worrying was running the risk of running out of oxygen. It was also said throughout the years that often the last thing a man would see before he died would be a set of green eyes staring at him from a distance, before he would collapse dead inside of the catacombs. What was even more common than that, however, was blindness. Now, what would cause a man to go blind, you ask? Was it a wink instead of a stare from those green eyes? No. The blindness was caused from getting to work before the sun rose, spending all day underground, and then getting out after the sun set. If you work under those conditions for long enough, when you inevitably do see the sun again, it will, unfortunately, burn your retinas, leaving you completely blind. But you may be asking, well, I understand that they're building these tunnels, but how did all these bodies get inside? Well, let's venture back into a time where the best way to get into heaven was to be buried in the house of God. Now, obviously, this was during a period in Europe when if you had enough money, it seemed as if the arches of heaven would just open right up for you. So the aristocrats paid their way to be buried into crypts and churches, thus ensuring their entry to the kingdom of God. Peasants, on the other hand, were buried in the fields with wooden crosses over their graves, in a lot of hope that it was close enough to being buried in the house of God. But then the middle class comes along and it can't fit in the crypts, so they start creating cemeteries next to churches. This practice starts outside of the cities and slowly creeps its way inside to the barriers of Paris. Well, now we're all the way up to the 1300s and big cemeteries have filled up. So what does one do with all the bodies and no room in the cemetery? People need to be buried in the cemetery if they want to go into heaven, that is. So they come up with the idea to add a second layer of dirt. Now I'm sure many of you who understand the phrase 6 feet under can have some guesses as to what might happen when you just throw some dirt on top of a cemetery to add some more bodies in shallow graves. That's right, the bodies start popping on up out of the ground. So, obviously, no one wanted to see this, so they built a massive wall around the cemetery. Now this brings us up to the 1500s, where things go from not very well thought out to a bit grifty with zero concern for consequences. And false coffins were made and regularly used. What is a false coffin? Well, I am so happy you have asked. A false coffin is one with a trap door at the bottom. So families would pay for a coffin and grave diggers would hit the trap door, dump the body in the ground, and reuse the coffin for the next SOB to pass away. So now we make our way all the way up to 1770, with a tale of a pub owner asking his daughter to go into the basement to fetch some wine. When the daughter didn't come back, he went to check on her only to discover the wall had broke and the girl was buried under a mix of dirt and skeletons, with only her hand holding the pitcher of wine above the ground. It was also said at this time that if you touched the walls of the cemetery, you would get gangrene. Yummy. Not only that, but the people of Paris came to discover that the king had known for years about the complaints at the nearby underground market. people were having a horrible time as their crops and meats being sold were going bad in just a matter of hours, and no one had any explanation. Why, it was all fine other places, it would last days. The explanation was that there were just far too many bodies decomposing in the area, so all burials inside the city were stopped. Now, around this time, a man named Crosby became chief of police and was charged with the task of figuring out what to do with this massive cemetery problem. And at the same time, another man, Guillermo, was in charge of the tunnels. And the two got together and realized one had a body problem and one had a tunnel problem, and so the two made a place for the 6 to 7 million people to be moved into the catacombs. For some perspective on just how many 6 to 7 million might be, currently in the enormous city of Paris, I cannot believe how big it is, there are 2.8 million people currently living there. The first bones made their way into the catacombs in April of 1776. Bones would come out between April and October, before the ground would freeze. And now an interesting fact that I didn't know is that for a human to go from flesh to just bones, it takes only 8 to 10 months with no embalming and presumably no one freezing. The burials are stopped in 1770, and they started bringing people in 1776. The move ended around 1780, so by that point it was all just skeletons. But skeletons aren't really cute like how we see them in our lab classes or in cartoons. The spine doesn't stick together. The jaw doesn't stay in. They're not attached by bone, so they're just pieces. And the living started to steal the teeth of the dead. So for the first 24 years, the bodies were just dumped down into piles, arranged by whichever cemetery they came out of, so your body wasn't put together, but it would be placed in the same kind of general area as the other parts of your body. In 1810, a bone architect was hired, and the stacking of bones began. Skulls and femurs were good stacking bones, which is most of what you will see when you walk around underground, and the other bones were thrown behind these skeleton walls. The designs created by the bones in many places, such as hearts or crosses or churches, different line designs, etc., were all done by bored bone stackers. The cult of science and reason was very popular at this time and is represented by obelas, which can be found on pillars in between the bones and in between crosses. But bones are not the only thing you will find in this section of the catacombs, which runs only about 2 of the 200 miles in the area. Sculptures by a quarryman inspector by the name of Decure was made between 1770 and 1782 and are considered the first underground exhibit inside the catacombs. Decure didn't love inspecting, but did like making sculptures. He worked on his project for 5 years, recreating the view from Port Mahon, where he was held captive as a prisoner of war for many years. He wanted to show off his sculptures to his friends, and did quite often, but the route to get there was so long, he decided to erect a staircase so people could see it very easily. Unfortunately, the staircase collapsed on him and killed him. However, his sculptures still made it through and can still be seen there today. Pillars were brought into the catacombs during the 1800s, and there's a black line on the ceiling, which is still there today, which shows the original path to the bones. See, there are 3 levels of tunnels running underground with no cell service, and it's quite easy to get lost under there. There is also a statue to memorialize the quarrymen who lost their lives, and a massive series of underground lakes and rivers, which can not only be seen around the catacombs, but drip inside of them. Let me tell you, standing in a room of thousands of bodies can be a little unnerving, but it does pale in comparison to standing in a room of thousands of bodies covered in mold while the ceiling is leaking on you, and the ground has muddy puddles. And at this moment, you realize that there seems to be 2 kinds of concrete holding the bodies together. One is gray and was brought in during the 50s and 60s, when the place really began to pick up as a tourist attraction, and the cement was used to kind of hold the bodies together. That way tourists, as they like to do, couldn't mess around with anything too much. The other is a more natural type of concrete of a sandy color, which was made from calcite leaking out of the bones over time, creating an adhesive. When you enter the rooms filled with the bodies, you are greeted by a huge stone with a French inscription carved in that translates, "Stop. This is the Empire of the Dead." There are many YOLO and Carpe Diem-esque quotes of the time carved into stone all over the place down there, most of which are in French or in Latin, but there is even one commemorating the time an Australian king came to visit. When bones fall, they are not allowed to be moved due to laws about disturbing the dead, more recently put in place. So there are randomly piles of bones spilt along the pathways. Today, you can see white tabs across stress fractures in the rock, as to this day, there is a branch of the Paris Police Department in charge of putting tabs across cracks. Every Parisian gets a quarryman report since, due to a law passed during the French Revolution, property extends from the home into the center of the earth. During the French Revolution, which those history buffs have already figured out was happening during the time that the bones were being brought down, a man named Philibert Aspart was a doorman at the Val de Grace Hospital. On a mission to fetch a certain liqueur from a cellar, Philibert actually ended up entering the Parisian catacombs instead. Walking around the pitch-black catacombs alone with just a single candle, Philibert became incredibly lost and confused. Many believed he had been intoxicated at that time as well. Philibert's candle blew out, making his vision completely black. At this point, it was virtually impossible for him to escape the profound darkness of the catacombs. His body was not found until 11 years later, when a group of cataphiles uncovered it. They identified him by hospital key rings hanging from his belt. Aspart is buried in the catacombs, the exact same place where he died, with a tombstone describing his death. Cataphiles and catacomb folklore tellers say that each November 3rd, Philibert's ghost haunts the labyrinth of the catacombs. This takes us to the year 1820. A top-secret party is to be held inside the catacombs. This is actually considered the first case of a cataphile, which you might have heard me say already, but I didn't explain. A cataphile is someone who goes out on their own to investigate the catacombs and creep around down there. So the party was meant to be top secret, however, all the aristocrats in town were invited. The reason we all know about this party is it made it into the gossip columns of local newspapers. People then found diaries and journal entries later talking about this party. The party is now recreated every year in the catacombs, but not the part with the bones. You see, the original was held in a section of the catacombs known as the Bone Bowl, where the bones are, yes, look like a giant bowl. And since the theme of the party was death, naturally funeral music was played. And still is today. Yes, throughout time, Nazis, black market dealers, French resistance have made their way through the 200 miles of catacombs, which have housed different sorts of battles and different things going on within them. Today, you can still find people. People said to me as I was going on this trip, and people said to me from America while I was on it, you know, Amelia, there are people who can sneak you down there to show you other areas of the catacombs. And yes, that might be fun, but I'm in a foreign country by myself, and it's a country I don't speak the language, and I don't know, I like to think of myself as a risk taker, as a brave young woman, but it's illegal to go down there, and there's no cell service, and if you stay more than a few days, you will get pneumonia, because it's very damp and very dark, and my dear friend Lauren, who also co-hosts the show with me from time to time, decided to show me the movie As Above, So Below. So, I'm all set with that. Throughout time, the legend of the glowing green-eyed monster that would be seen before death still stands. People are still talking about that today. In the early 1990s, a group of cataphiles were walking through the chambers of the ossuary. They happened upon a video camera on the ground. To their surprise, the camera had footage on it. As the group watched the footage, they heard disturbing noises. It became apparent the man holding the video camera was lost and had no idea how to escape the tunnels. In the video, you can clearly see that the man was going mad inside the underground network. The video ends abruptly with the man dropping his camera to the ground. To this day, no one knows who the man was or if he ever came out. But many believe that this inspired the movie As Above, So Below, which I just referenced a second ago. In 2009, this is the weirdest of all. In 2009, two police officer inspectors hear a dog barking and go towards it. There they find a fully functioning movie theater. They realize the dog barking was just a video recording to scare people away from the area. The alcove next to the theater had a kitchenette. They found cables and quickly discovered that whoever had set this up was getting power from the traffic lights above. They went out to their car to figure out what happened and came back a short while later and everything was gone. The only thing that they found was a note that said, in French of course, "Don't come looking for us." A group called the USX International said they were responsible, but there has never really been any set anything about it. I mean, no one really truly knows. In the year 2013, Airbnb auctioned off a night in the catacombs. Now, doesn't that sound like fun? Just pay your money and go sleep a night with thousands and thousands of bodies. A German man won, and so he got to bring someone with him, and well, one might think this might be a romantic place to take your wife, or a friend, another paranormal investigator. Oh no, this man brought his mother. So he was there with his mother, and there was a guard paid for by, you know, Airbnb to make sure these people were safe, who stood by the entrance to the gate, made sure no one came in, anything like that. And all of a sudden, he hears something and sees the mother and son run out screaming of the catacombs straight into their hotel room, which they did not leave for days and days before making their way back to Germany, and have refused to be interviewed about what they saw. Recently, what they tell you at the catacombs is that they received an envelope of teeth with a note that said, "My family visited the catacombs, and we took these teeth with us as souvenirs. But ever since we got them, our home has been shrouded in bad luck, so we'd like to return them to the grave." Well, these are just some of the stories and experiences you might get to find before you walk up the 110 stairs on your way out of this spooky space. Yes, Paris has been fabulous, and the catacombs were incredible. We don't really have anything like that in New England, and it's interesting to see, for sure. I highly recommend you all go if you have the chance. And if you look on our social media, and hopefully on our website eventually too, you'll find lots of photos and videos that I've put up of this experience. And that's it for this week. I hope you all have a great rest of your evening, and I look forward to seeing you next week. Again, my name is Amelia. You can find me online at ghosthuntinginnewengland.com, Instagram, ghosthuntinginnewengland, facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, on Twitter at ghosthuntingne. Thank you to Aaron Schill, who does our intro music. And I think that's all I have for tonight, you guys. As always, happy hunting.